My guest has been described by Wired Magazine as having the coolest job in the industry. He's a leading technology innovator who's raised hundreds of millions of dollars for startups. He's sold companies to Fortune 500 firms, taken companies public, and partnered with some of the world's biggest brands, including Coca-Cola, McDonald's, General Motors, United Airlines, Microsoft, Apple, Verizon, and Facebook. He's the CEO of SeaChange International, a leading global multi-screen video software company. He was a senior advisor to LinkedIn and was appointed to the White House Initiative for Education and Technology by President Bill Clinton. He's the consummate business rock star, and I'd like to welcome Jay Samet to those diner and motorcycle guys. Welcome, Jay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Congratulations on an absolutely phenomenal new book called Disrupt You. I must confess, I think my total tally of books bought right now is either 7 or 8, and I'm giving them away to anybody who's got even the slightest entrepreneurial motivation.
Oh, I'm glad you loved it. It was my way of paying it forward. I've been very lucky and successful, as have many of my friends and associates. And I was able to look at what was the pattern of how you can disrupt any business, any industry, and get success. So hopefully Disrupt You shortens other people's journeys.
What I found particularly fascinating is in the introduction to Disrupt You, you write that all disruption starts with introspection, that the way we understand our own internal value chain is at the core of our external success. What exactly is that value chain? And how do we tap into it?
So just like a business, each individual has parts of what they do and don't do. And so much of what we believe we're not good at, we were told at a young age, you can't read maps, you're not good at math, you're not good at something, and it's absolute malarkey. And I talk about in the book how you can retrain and reprogram yourself to basically do anything. I mean, really to succeed, you only need 2 core attributes. One, you have to be persistent, and 2, you have to be willing to hire what you can't do, and it's really that easy.
One of your favorite sayings that I learned from reading the book is security robs ambition. That what holds most people back are their own beliefs. Why do we do that to ourselves, and what do we do about it?
We were raised with this mythology from the 1950s, post-war, that if you go to school and you get good grades, you'll get a job at a big company, and that company will be there and take care of you forever, and you'll have a gold watch and a pension. Nothing could be farther from reality. In fact, this is the 60th anniversary of the term Fortune 500, and of those original giant, immovable monster companies, only 57 survive on the list. So not only will your career be disrupted if you choose to do something, it'll be disrupted if you don't. So you better learn how to deal with a changing world. You know, another way to really, you know, think about this is you're going to have one shot at life. Do you just want to spend it paying bills till you die, or do you want to do something? What I like to say is the illusion of security is what's robbing ambition nowadays, because people believe that they're taking the safe route. But what is safe about spending your entire life each day for 40 years doing something you don't believe? For what? When in fact, as I read in the book, I mean, the self-made billionaire in his 20s is happening monthly. These are not exceptions to the rule. These are not exceptional people. But we're now one click away from 6 billion people. The opportunity to become a billionaire is really, you just have to get it right for 1 nanosecond.
In Disrupt You, you talk about folks needing to have what you call a disruptor's map. How do we chart our path? How do we get to where we want to go?
So it's so funny. So many people say, oh, God, I want to be rich. I want to be this or that. Well, where do you want to be in 5 years? If you don't know where you want to be, I can guarantee you won't get there. So many people are blocked by that. They don't know all the steps in the path. And what we talk about in Disrupt You is you really just need to know the destination, and then you can work backwards. If it was something as simple as, let's say, being a surgeon, you'd know, well, if I want to be a surgeon, I've got to take a step back from that. I've got to go to med school. Well, if I've got to go to med school, I've got to get good grades, et cetera. So you can start figuring out where do you want to go and then figure out what do you need. What do you need to pack in that disruptor suitcase? So mentors, very key nowadays. you could go on LinkedIn and find people that are made it to the top of their fields that would love to help you because it validates what they've learned. And it is so easy once you start mapping it out. You don't need to know all the steps for your journey, but once you set a date to a dream, it becomes a goal.
When we hear the word brands, we think of specific products and services, and rarely do people see themselves as their own brand. But one of the points you make in Disrupt You is that to succeed in business, you've got to see yourself as a brand of one. And I absolutely love that concept.
Yeah, so one of my true axioms, Samit's axiom, is the following. Be the best in the world at what you do, or the only one doing it. Because if you're the only one doing something, you are by definition the best. So your best chance of success, either in a company or in starting your own business, is to find a way to make yourself unique and therefore sought after and desirable. It's fairly easy to do, and there's a lot of examples in the book. But if you don't start thinking of yourself as a brand and having a voice and a persona, why should someone else look to call you and hire you as opposed to the thousand other people that do what you do?
It's a recurring theme in today's economy as people work longer into their careers and that the whole life cycle is extended. People are more and more reinventing themselves and leaving the corporate arena to become entrepreneurs. But you make the point in Disrupt You that disruptors can also influence business from the inside as intrapreneurs, that you don't have to leave the corporate arena to achieve your dreams. How do people, in your words, change dinosaurs to disruptors from the inside?
So I've had three of those positions in my career. I was brought in to EMI, was a great example, the world's largest music company. They sold round things in physical brick-and-mortar stores. They saw digital coming, didn't know what to do. And I remember vividly telling the CEO, I'm not a music guy. And he said wisely, I have 11,000 music guys. What I don't have is a future. So many people out there listening know that their company's on the wrong path. Think of the guy that developed the digital camera inside Kodak, okay? He started in 1975. Kodak invented digital photography. But that meant he was competing against the guy in charge of film with the high margins who would cannibalize that business. You're not going to be able to fight that power. So either you have to figure out internally how to make a case for the world is changing and either your company can survive or can ignore it and go out of business. And if you think by duck and covering and not bringing that up to your boss, you're protecting your job, no, you're going to end up like every single employee at Kodak. You didn't protect your job. The whole company goes out of business. So it takes guts to be an entrepreneur because you have to overcome your fear of failure. And that's the one advantage that America has over the rest of the world. We don't have the best educational system. We don't have the best banking system. We don't have the best tax system. But we have grown up, if you're baby boomers, with I Love Lucy, if you're younger, with The Simpsons. But the storyline's the same. Lucy comes up with a get-rich-quick idea, it falls apart, and life goes on. And that's what many people don't know, is some of the most successful people in the world, their first businesses failed, but they learn from failure.
One thing that I got a kick of in the book, I'm reading it, I'm rolling with you, I'm keeping step with you, and I'm just thoroughly loving the book. And then you have this unique way of putting the brakes on. I'll give you an example. You write the key that to finding a big idea, you have to first find the problem that needs a solution, and then you come up with an idea for the solution. And then you add, now the next step is go kill your idea. I wonder if you'd elaborate on that.
Sure. So everybody else teaches you to nurture your idea. You have this great idea for a business, da-da-da-da-da. Almost every success comes from pivoting. And what I mean by killing your idea is the second you go out in the market, you will find out what's wrong with your idea, and you're the first person you educate in business is your competition. And why do that when you are spending money, spending time? So starting a new business is literally a speed to fail exercise. How quickly can you find out everything wrong with your idea before you run out of time or money? So So if you can brainstorm, if you can go out to what I call apostles, find, you know, 12 people that would use your technology, not friends and relatives that tell you how great you are, but somebody that would tell you your business, I would never buy this from you because. And if you can start solving those and you come up with that idea that can't be killed, that's a zombie idea. You can then take that and get it funded overnight anywhere.
We're talking with Jay Samit, author of the phenomenal new book, Disrupt You. And I mentioned as a baby boomer, you brought memories back of some of the things that I grew up loving, Slinky, Play-Doh, Silly Putty. How does the success of those items and even NASA take the pressure off disruptors who think that to be successful, I've got to come up with the product. I got to do all the research, development, everything. How do they not have to put that pressure on themselves?
Everybody thinks that, you know, big money and big ideas comes from being like Doc Brown with the eureka moment of the flux capacitor, like you have to invent everything wholly formed. When in fact, the biggest surprise most people don't realize, and it's very provocative to say this, and I say it in the book, scientific researchers at your top universities and top labs have no idea what they're doing. Let that sink in. By definition, what research is discovering something you don't know. So their purpose is not to solve for a business need. So tons of things are patented and invented and sitting that people spend millions and billions of dollars on that no business person has looked at and said, wow, I can do something with this. And you can go to NASA as a website where you can take their patents and go and build it into business and you make the money. The example of Silly Putty was one of my favorites. Go back World War II. Japan has all Southeast Asia. We can't get any rubber. There's no way to make tires and rain suits and everything else that the troops need. So they spend millions of dollars at our top research universities trying to make a synthetic rubber. And they finally came up with one that has the same viscosity, the same this, but it won't hold its shape. They send it to everybody. Nobody could do anything with it. But a guy after the war is playing with it and says, God, I can't do anything with it, but I can't put it down. So he got a bunch of kids on a weekend at Princeton to stick it into plastic eggs, took it to Toy Fair, and 300 million Silly Putty eggs have been sold. The other fun example is everybody thinks Gutenberg invented the printing press, you know, in movable type. No. There was a huge bunch of people making white wines that all went out of business, and these were wine presses. And they were all for sale for next to nothing in the mid-1500s. So Gutenberg got the idea of taking one of these used presses, something invented for something else, and pivoting it to a new business, movable type.
So you remove the excuse that I can't think of a product, I can't come up with anything.
Right.
So there are ways to do that. And also you make the wonderful point in the book that you can't use lack of funding as an excuse not to pursue your dream. And you are a big advocate of crowdsourcing.
Oh, crowdsourcing. So this year, for the first time, crowdsourcing will outpace venture capital. If you can come up with something that solves a problem, all that an entrepreneur does is solve problems. The more people you solve for, the more money you make. So if you work on a big problem and everybody wants it, you can now go on these sites and say, I've come up with this idea. Here's what I want to make. And you look at the ones that get funded, they get funded by people that want to be customer number one, that are willing to say, I'd pay for you to do that. And what a great way to bring a product to market. You cut out all the middle people, and you get validation that there is a market before you start spending money.
As a person who spent a good portion of their career in sales and marketing, I had the biggest smile on my face when I read that what you learned as the heart of all sales and marketing is the absence of logic.
What all sales and marketing comes down to is how can you get an emotional response from a consumer as opposed to a logical one. And the great example that I fought and lost was when I was a senior executive at Sony. We had the Walkman, 14,000 retail locations. Steve came out with the iPod. Okay, our commercials told you the battery life, the specs, the weight, all these rational points of why our device was a better device. Apple's commercial was a black silhouette moving in front of bright colors with just white earbuds, never told you anything about the product, but emotionally you wanted it. That's what it's all about.
One of the other takeaways I got from your book, Disrupt You, is that the opportunity often lies right in front of us if we have the sense and the sensitivity, if you will, to put disparate things together. And you tell this wonderful story that is downright inspirational about WWQT AM radio in Clearwater, Florida, and Lowell Bud Paxson. And I wonder if you'd share that story with those Diner and Motorcycle Guys listeners.
Sure. So I'll do the short version. Imagine you own a radio station in a small market, and you're doing so bad that nobody will advertise with you, right? Your business model's broken. So you can't figure it. You're tired of yelling at your sales guys. They can't do so. You're going to show them that they're wrong. So you go down to a used surplus place, and you buy a bunch of avocado-colored can openers, and you tell your DJs to get on and talk about how great the can opener is so we can show that we can sell out some can openers and take that data to other businesses to advertise. Make a long story short, they did it. They didn't have a pick, pack, and ship. They didn't have anything. They get outside of their building, and people are lined up outside the radio station with cash in hand to buy the can openers. Wait a second. We can make more money selling junk on our radio station than playing music. Let's just sell stuff on the radio. And they made enough money to buy a TV thing. And what's the name of that company today? Home Shopping Network. A failed radio station makes a guy $1 billion. Had the radio station done well, had they sold the same old ads like everybody else that had a radio station and did the same business model and not been forced to disrupt, he would have never become a billionaire. So if you're listening and you have problems in your life, congratulations, you have a head start, because all that obstacles are is opportunities in disguise. And if you can figure out the pattern of how to turn those problems into solutions, that's your path to success.
And I think the path to the success of your new book, Disrupt You, is the fact that it offers readers a way to master personal transformation, to seize the opportunities right in front of them, and to thrive in an era of what you so wonderfully depict as endless innovation. Jay, when you look at how successful this book is going to be, when you look back a year from now and you see the impact it's had, what's going to be the most meaningful thing for you personally about writing this book?
I wrote it to help others. And what's been most meaningful right now is the emails and responses, either people that follow me at Jay Samet on Twitter or go to jaysamet.com and tell me what they've done with the knowledge in there and how it's taken their business to the next level and some of the new ideas that are coming out and some of the innovations, because we all benefit in a world where there's successful entrepreneurs. And that was my purpose. And along that lines, if I can be so bold, I'd like to give a gift to everybody that listens to your show. I also wrote a companion 40-page workbook to help you plot out your disruptor's map and figure out what you want to do. And I will gladly send that to any of your listeners for free. They can just reach me on social media or my website, and I will email them that companion workbook.
Jay, thank you so much for being part of those Diner and Motorcycle Guys today and for sharing your wit, wisdom, and insight in Disrupt You. It is just a wonderful book, and like I said, I think I'm somewhere near 7 and 8 copies that I've bought and just given away. And with all your success, it's just so incredible to be able to tap into what you know and to participate in the confidence you're putting out there to say, you can do this. You can absolutely do this, whatever you want.
If an idiot like me could make it to the top, so can anybody else. You're very kind, and I got to give props to you. Compared to most of the interviews, you actually read the book and you embrace it and you get it. And it's really my chance to, what's the point of having knowledge if you don't share it? If I can make one person's journey that much quicker, one less scar on their back than I had to have on mine, then my life had meaning.
Now, Jay, can you share one more time where folks can find you and follow you on social media?
So you can find me on Twitter at Jay Samet, J-A-Y-S-A-M-I-T, or go to jaysamet.com. or just Google me and you can find them. I'm pretty much out there.
And again, Jay, thanks for being on the show today. Jay Samet, author of Disrupt You,